Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Toby Miller, the chair of the Department of Media and Cultural Studies at the University of California, Riverside. He is one of the world's leading analysts on popular culture, media, and their connection to the politics of everyday life. His books include Technologies of Truth, Cultural Citizenship, and the Popular Media. Global Hollywood, Cultural Citizenship, How Conservatives and Neoliberals Captured the Cultural Politics of Television and How We Can Take It Back. Makeover Nation, The United States of Reinvention, and Television Studies, The Basics. His forthcoming book is Greening the Media. Welcome to Background Briefing, Toby Miller.
It's a pleasure.
And tonight's Academy Awards are expected to, the broadcast is expected to reach a record global audience. It has been, in terms of one who covers national security affairs, it's an interesting omission in the way that we look at national security, not in the broader issues in terms of, we only look at it in narrow military terms, but in terms of America's soft power and its influence around the world, probably nothing has been more successful than Hollywood. Would you argue that?
I think you could argue that. This term soft power, but it's associated with Joseph Nye, who is an academic and used to be a policy guy in the Clinton administration, encompasses the idea of public diplomacy and the whole notion that you can get beyond the difficulties of state-to-state relationships and corporate-to-state relationships between different nations if you have what's thought of as a more organic connection between populations. And however weirdly that might seem, Hollywood is regarded as capable of cutting through the dross that often makes things difficult in our foreign policy between the United States and other countries.
So why is it then that the Republicans and the conservatives in this country hate Hollywood if it's in fact a great adjunct to American power?
Well, the Republicans have a number of different agendas, obviously, as do the Democrats. One agenda of the Republicans is to undercut financial sources of the Democratic Party. That's why it's in favor of so-called tort reform, i.e. getting rid of class action lawsuits, because they're A, an effective means of the working class getting political redress, and B, they're an effective means of providing the part of the ruling class with its money that supports the Democratic Party. That's also the reason why they don't like Hollywood, because Hollywood is basically populated by people of a fairly liberal persuasion in American political terms, as are most of the arts, and they provide large amounts of money to Democratic administrations and aspirants. In addition to that, there is a political component that's ideological that one would have to consider as well.
And that is?
Well, if you look back to the period of the so-called culture wars of the late 80s, early 90s, and the assaults on the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities by successive Republican administrations and politicians, the notion was that the image internally and externally of the country was going to the dogs. In other words, it was being taken over by minorities, by gays, by people who were using entertainment and the arts for their own political agendas. So when the Republican administration got into power in 2001 under George W. Bush, by the way, I had a nightmare last night where he was a friend of mine. The minute they got into power, the first thing they did was basically cut the State Department's entire public diplomacy budget. Mind you, that wasn't only more than a few months, as we know, before September the 11th, after which they plowed hundreds of millions into the State Department's cultural budget. So they think that there's something bad about the image Hollywood gives to the world, but they also want to use it as a tool at the same time as they want to undermine its legitimacy and its money by associating it with liberalism.
So, Toby Miller, given the hegemonic power of Hollywood in terms of its being one of the more effective tools of American influence. Clearly, the military tool has backfired with the Iraq war and it's backfiring in Afghanistan. But I'm wondering, in the current global, with globalization, how is Hollywood going to hold on to its hegemony and its box office receipts given the advent of piracy?
Piracy could be regarded as a major problem for Hollywood. Alternatively, one could regard it as very free public relations, free merchandising, free marketing. If you think about the number of people entering the global middle class around the world in rapidly developing economies, getting across your market message to them that you have an interesting product would be extremely expensive. If, on the other hand, piracy, the illegal, in inverted commas, use of your movies, for example, or TV shows as calling cards, introduces the Hollywood concept, the high concept of expensive movie making, and influences the tastes of this emergent middle class, suddenly you have hundreds of millions of consumers on whom you've spent literally nothing in promotional terms. So every time we hear various neoclassical economists or apparatchiks of the Motion Picture Association of America or tame Democratic senators and congresspeople of other stripes saying this is the cost in hundreds of millions of dollars to the United States of movie piracy or TV piracy, it's got to be taken with a grain of salt, in my view, because, yes, of course, there is supposed lost revenue, but think of all the revenue that's going to be set up, that's going to be achievable as a consequence of the free advertising that piracy gives in these emergent markets.
And there's been obviously a battle here over piracy between Silicon Valley here in Northern California and Hollywood here in Southern California. And as you know, Toby Miller, Hollywood hired a somewhat discredited U.S. senator who got a cozy home loan from one of the most egregious of the Wall Street predators, Angelo Mozilla of Countrywide. And through the revolving door, he ended up heading up the Motion Picture Association as their chief lobbyist in Washington. They thought they had a slam dunk because of Chris Dodd's connections to the U.S. Senate. It looked like they were going to get through their anti-piracy act, but then Silicon Valley woke up and trounced them. But that's not to say that Hollywood didn't have a good argument, right?
Absolutely. And just to mention one fact, Chris Dodd is the latest in a long line of people over 70 years who've come directly from public administration in Washington to running the Motion Picture Association of America. People from the postmaster's office, people from president's offices, people from the House of Representatives. In terms of what's going on in this, in a sense, intra-California battle, a struggle between major corporations and entrepreneurs in the north of the state, as you say, the software barons, and in the south of the state, which is to say, if you like, the textual barons or the story barons. It certainly isn't over. Already we've seen a number of major Washington lobbyists basically cut the ties that they've established with software Northern California people, because Hollywood said, enough of that. And Hollywood is much more practiced at basic DC lobbying. What happened, I think, in this case was that they were blindsided by the capacity of immensely popular everyday software like Wikipedia and Google to enlist hundreds and hundreds of millions of people, and certainly hundreds of thousands who are influential in the United States, on their side of the story, which is to say they want everything to be free, except, of course, the stuff that they own, which they want to be able to charge for, whereas Hollywood wants to be able to charge for everything that it can. But one of the things to remember here is that whilst the Northern Californians might say we're the masters of technology, really they're not, because it's Hollywood that has survived successive waves of technological innovation and turned them into money-making opportunities. It did that with the arrival of sound. It did it with the arrival of color. It did it with the televisualization and suburbanization of American life, which cut theatrical attendances. It did it with the emergence of the video cassette recorder and then the DVD, which allowed people to time shift and so on. It's done it with personal video recorders. These all eventually become grist to the mill for Hollywood. And this will be the case, undoubtedly, with the internet, once it's mastered, and it's already en route to doing so, the means of making money from streaming and downloading.
But that's not to say that Hollywood has always been prescient. Hollywood opposed the VCR when it was invented, and it ended up being one of their most successful revenue streams for the blockbuster aftermarket, if you will. They've also Napster. They opposed Napster and these downloads. And of course, arguably, Apple showed the way with iTunes, that you can monetize this new technology if you're smart about it, as opposed to if you sort of use the blunt instrument of lobbying. But my understanding is that, it is a problem because you've got a whole generation of kids that have grown up on the internet who think everything is for free. and they expect it to be for free. And that clearly, if America's future is, since we've gotten rid of our industrial bases, all we've got left is our intellectual property, unless we protect our intellectual property, whether it's pharmaceuticals, software, or movies, we don't have a future.
You're absolutely right on both scores, Ian. It's correct to say that Hollywood has been reactive rather than prescient in its relationship to technological innovation over the last 80 years. No argument against that. What it tends to do quite effectively is stem the tide long enough to work out how to turn a buck out of things. That's what it's good at. You know, there's new technology, it could take over. How do we make sure we can monetize it? First point. Second point, you're absolutely correct about the deindustrialization of this country and the fact that the erosion of manufacturing and other sectors has seen intellectual property become from something that used to be boring and of minimal interest to most people, front and center of our economy and front and center of the consciousness of many people. I think the iTunes example you give shows that young people are prepared to pay for their pleasures, actually, online. It's just that it's got to be done in the right way, and the pricing's got to be done in the right way. You know, we're seeing the Los Angeles Times announcing this week a system of trying to monetize use of the internet. The New York Times has managed to do it fairly effectively this time, having bolstered up the first time around. The Wall Street Journal has done it extremely successfully. So has The Economist in the UK. In fact, The Economist, a weekly newspaper, as it calls itself, it's really like a magazine. Since it made its internet subscription something you have to pay for, its printed sales have gone up. So if you know your market and you work out how you can reach out to people, still retain your intellectual property as a source of revenue, but make bits of it free in order to entice people in and encourage them to pay small amounts of money for reasonably good deals, then I think the monetization can come, especially when, in the case of Hollywood, suddenly you're not so worried about distribution, you're not so worried about transportation, you're not so worried about exhibitors taking a cut, and you're not having to manufacture things like DVDs or VHS cassettes. So there are all kinds of costs that are cut out, and middle people that are cut out, that eventually will see Hollywood doing very well.
Again, I'm speaking with Toby Miller, who is the chair of the Department of Media and Cultural Studies at the University of California, Riverside. He's one of the world's leading analysts of popular culture, media, and the connection to the politics of everyday life. And we're talking about Hollywood versus Silicon Valley. But now that tonight the Academy Awards is Hollywood's opportunity to celebrate its wares to the entire globe, a record global audience is expected this time around. This is a great opportunity for Hollywood to put its best face forward. But the movies are pretty pale. This is, a silent movie. It seems to be, it even won the Indie Award, which is Indie Spirit Awards, which is supposed to be more rebellious, less establishment. So I would suggest that that's probably going to be the establishment choice, the movie The Artist. But most of what they make nowadays are huge blockbusters made for 14-year-old boys, special effects laden, based on comic books. They basically have driven out the low budget movies, or even the medium budget movies. There's just no room for them anymore.
Well, nowadays, remember that whereas, you know, the various film industries in India and China churn out at their big studios hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of films a year, the major Hollywood studios, which are basically pretty much the same as they were, you know, well before you and I were born, are producing themselves very few films indeed. They might be producing 15 or 20 on a slate a year compared to what they did, say, 30 or 40 years ago. That's almost nothing. What they do in order to minimize their risk and maximize their return on investment is buy materials, buy texts, buy movies, buy TV shows that are produced at the risk of others. So in other words, they've managed to incorporate the so-called independent edgy film into their distribution arm, and their own resources, they focus, as you say, on these blockbusters that are associated with properties, ideas, contents, fantasies, and so on, that have already been tested in lots of other markets, you know, like a Marvel Comics superhero or a James Bond figure from novels, from cartoons, from newspapers, you name it, or TV series that have already been made. The Hollywood mantras are basically, one, get free money, i.e. money from other people like governments or individuals who won't take equity stakes in the investment, and two, innovate as little as possible. because by innovating as little as possible, you run the minimal risk. If you stick with generic formats that are well known, you've only got to tweak them 3, 4, 5%, let's say, in order to make the story recognizable to audiences, but subtly different, subtly distinctive. That's the whole deal with, for example, big franchises like Jason Bourne or Iron Man or Star Wars.
So, Toby Miller, if we have a situation where the promotion cost to release films, whether it's a huge cartoon, $100-200 million budget, or whether it's a $10 million highbrow personal movie, the promotional costs are pretty much the same. And my understanding is that the reason that we're not getting the kind of movies that we were used to over the years, and the ones that end up actually winning the Academy Awards because of their content as opposed to their special effects, they're on the way out. Piracy apparently is such that the big movies, they can prevent piracy by releasing them around the world at once, and the little movies that aren't interesting enough to pirate, they leave alone, but the ones in the middle, they go for. So everything seems to be working against, and on top of that, you have to add HBO. They make so many movies that the studios used to make in that mid-range. My fear is that the mid-range movie is becoming extinct.
I think you're absolutely right. And if you talk to people in this town who are screenwriters, lawyers, accountants, producers, and you know them very, very well from much of your own work, it is exactly that mid-budget range film that is being cut out. On the other hand, there's a big problem for overseas films, especially ones that aren't in English, where possibly if, say, they come from a poorer country, they might have made a magnificent movie for the equivalent of $1 million. How are they going to find $50 million to promote it? Quite apart, of course, from the costs of subtitling or dubbing and so on. So there's no doubt that the vast investment in the high concept movie institution is really militating against the medium range film.
Well, Toby Miller, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I thank you so much for joining us here in the studio today.
It's a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Toby Miller, who's the chair of the Department of Media and Cultural Studies at the University of California, Riverside. He's one of the world's leading analysts of popular culture, media, and their connections to the politics of everyday life. His books include Global Hollywood, Cultural Citizenship, How Conservatives and Neoliberals Captured the Cultural Politics of Television and How We Can Take It Back, Makeover Nation, The United States of Reinvention, and Television Studies, The Basics. His forthcoming book is Greening the Media. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.